Welcome to The Ether. Today is Friday, February 11th, 2022. This episode of The Ether is brought to you by LuArt. LuArt is the first gamified NFT platform built on the Terra network. LuArt provides a seamless minting and trading experience, all while earning you rewards just for being a user. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the community in the Discord server for the most up-to-date news and announcements regarding all the hot new NFT launches, platform upgrades, and new projects hitting the secondary marketplace. Are you ready to put your helmet on and join the movement? Find out more at luart.io. This episode of The Ether is also brought to you by WeFund. WeFund is a community crowdfunding cross-chain incubator on Terra, and it's the first launchpad that implements a milestone funding release system to protect investors. All money raised for projects is deposited in Anchor Protocol, and it's refundable, and all decisions are based on community voting power. WeFund is community-focused and designed to be a user-friendly experience for both project creators and investors. Be sure to follow them on Twitter and join the Telegram for more information. Links are in the show notes and check them out online at WeFund.app. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. Today on The Ether, we have part two of a two-part CeFi space, Luna Terra Info. Let's take a listen.
Well, anyways, I'm gonna figure out how to get this done. I'll be here, but I'm gonna figure out how to get this.
Yeah, think of the workflow. Luis, you there?
Oh no, I have it already. We've been building this in the background.
Oh, you have. Okay.
Before you go, guys, do you have any alpha regarding Cosmos? I mean, are they going
the
to
ecosystem?
Do something with their
Stake, yeah, Adam, stake secret by Luna.
Yeah, I do. But feel like always one step behind. I mean, I was waiting for the airdrops, and then I learned that, oh, you have to stake before Christmas. Okay, that was last year.
the key is to not chase. The airdrop functionality and the intelligence of platforms is getting a lot stronger in the V2 of DeFi. So they're not going to blanket airdrop you, or if they do, you're going to get like diminishing returns on having too much, too little, or on the wrong, you know, high percentage validation and shit like that. Like Shade did a good job of that.
Or you might have to have some like voting participation, other elements too, by the way, for some airdrops. So just be aware of that. So, but yeah, either way, if there's a value accrual mechanism to Adam, we talked about this earlier, in terms of shared security, it probably is good for the longer term price action of Adam. So not reasonable thing to keep in mind. And it's retained more of its value than Polkadot did, for example, from the top. And probably that's because Cosmos is actually useful now. That's probably the reason for that. But there could be any number of reasons, but yeah, I hold Adam as well and think it's kind of cool as far as like the long-term trajectory of it.
I'd also start staking Secret now.
Oh, what's happening with Secret right now?
I've just whispered it. Just stake it. You're welcome.
that's a good one.
I am going to come and get that alpha out of you.
Trevor, let me intro you, bro.
We're not email. Your intro, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
I'm gonna hop off. It's always a pleasure talking with you guys. Thanks
Mikey
so
Mike.
Much.
Mikey Mike in the morning.
Of course. All right. Have a good one, everyone.
All right, peace.
Good night, bye.
I had a question about the multisig. I hit Hutch because you guys were asking about the multisig. Was it just the security of it, or did you actually, it looked like people having issues like setting up the multisig, because honestly, it's not easy to set it up. Like it is once you know what you're doing, but before that, it doesn't make sense. So did you guys have issue like questions about setting up the multi-sig, or was it just the security stuff?
I don't know if it's actionable in the current form. Like, the thought of me getting somebody to, you know, to sign off on every little transaction is just going to be a huge headache. You know,
I mean, you can do it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I suppose so. Okay. Yeah. So
if you're running like a fund type thing for like maybe your family or like a group of like people that you trust or something, then it absolutely makes sense. When you're not, if you're making like a transaction every couple of days or even like once a day, you know, it does make sense.
That's true. So what's the headache of setting it up?
So for setting up the multi-sig, it's really not intuitive. You have to go in and create the new multi-sig, and you have to put all the addresses in the right order, not the right order, but in the order that you put them in, remember them and write them down. And also remember the voting weight required to pass any kind of proposal, because the way that you add the multi-sig into your wallet after you create it is you have to click create multi-sig again. And then you have to put all the right addresses in the same order, top to bottom, with the right passing weight, and hit create new multi-sig in order to add the multi-sig that you just created. And that includes everybody else who has the address. So not mad and intuitive. There's no like add existing multi-sig. I don't think, unless they fixed that already.
Well, Hutcher Lucky, who's here in the chat, like maybe someone could do the YouTube video on how to do that shit. Cause there are going to be a few people that would want to do it. It's just, but then the problem is like, where do you find the information on how to make it work? Like, you figured out.
It took a while. I felt stupid a couple times. And that I'm like, why isn't this working? Like, where's the, because there's no button to add the existing multi-sig. Again, unless they added it, the easiest way is to go and get the guy who made the Terra station and have them just add that button in.
Yeah. Some of these things aren't intuitive is the problem. And you, like, they're not idiot proof in the creation process. So maybe some feedback on Agora does Terra station have like a forum for that particular app, or
there's like a dude who makes the Terra station.
Like a dude.
It is a dude on Twitter. I don't know. I don't remember his name, because I've never talked to him. You just, somebody go get him and tell him.
But did said dude make a Medium article, or is there something like something where there's screenshots and step by step, or is it really just kind of trial and error?
I mean, it's been out for a while, so my guess is yes, but also it's possible that no. Hutch, find out and report back.
Right. I heard from this lady called Meta. She's very famous in crypto, and she said the multi-sig is bullshit. And she said that
that's not true. Like, that's just inaccurate.
She called it out on the interview. She said when I'm terrible with Italian. Daniela or Daniel and the Frog Nation leader.
Oh.
Yes. So she said that off.
Followers does not equal knowing what the fuck you're talking about. And so, just having money.
Clearly, because I don't have any clue either, and everyone keeps following me. I'm still wondering what the fuck people are doing. Like, I'm gonna get someone wrecked at some point, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, it's possible that Seffy is just full of shit and is like some 14-year-old kid with like a bag of Cheetos and a code Red Mountain Dew that's just fucking with us.
Yeah, you should totally imagine that I'm just a 14-year-old kid. That's the wisest choice you could possibly make.
That's what I hope people think of me. Like, don't listen to me. I don't know what I'm talking about, maybe, or do I?
Yeah, it does make me nervous. Like, you know, I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, who are all these people following? And, you know, like, I'm used to like posting on other forums where like nobody reads shit, no one cares. And like, you know, and like on Twitter, it's like, it's weird. It's like you post some stuff just for, you know, like the stuff you're looking at and whatever, and like people start following for whatever reason. And then it's like, well, after a certain point, the only thing you can do is like post sarcastic shit and like memes, because like anything you say, like people are going to go buy some coin or some shit, right? So it's just weird how like, it's like paradoxically, you become like maybe more and more useless the bigger the account gets in some ways.
Oh, you're not useless, Steffi.
Okay, fine. But well, anyway.
Not right now. When you're in a Twitter space, you're not useless. But outside of that,
yeah,
I can't really speak to that. That's why you stay in. I think that's why you stay in Twitter spaces. You're afraid of what you'll turn in. You're afraid you'll turn into a pumpkin if you ever exit a Twitter space.
Yeah, these things are fucking cool. Like, look at this. We're like chatting about all sorts of stuff. You know, it's kind of interesting. It's like the quickest way to, like, you know, chat with like-minded individuals that there like ever has been. It's pretty interesting how like easy it is to get the folks that care about the same things in the same place at one time. It's just interesting.
Yeah. I mean, anyway. I used to like a couple months ago, or I guess now 5 months ago, before I got really, really, really involved in Terra, I was a hardliner against social media because I thought it was like so stupid, and it is incredibly stupid. The people that are on here, a lot of them, and what goes on, a lot of it. But what I found is it's clearly the best vehicle for disseminating information fast, A. And B, what Sefi, you just said, was bringing together the people that believe the same things that you believe. So the followers, like, I didn't think I'd have people following me. I just got on Space and just started shouting about shit I believe in strongly and passionate about. And Sefi, you do the same thing. And it's kind of naturally, you kind of gather the people that feel the same way, or the people that are pretending to feel the same way to fit in. So,
yeah, I mean, there is an echo chamber sort of element to this universe, but at the same time, it's like, you know, it's up to you to sort of decide, you know, which echo chambers to get involved with too. So, you know, like if, you know, I like to, you know, like hit up some of the AMAs of the developers, for example, right? Like you kind of hear the early alpha, you hear where the development's going, and maybe you have some ideas of like where they missed something and you can sort of bring it up, right? It's not like you're talking about, you know, something so abstract, like, you know, like, I don't know what the Twitter spaces for like religion and shit look like, but I can imagine they're a shit show.
like in real life. Just imagine, you know, it in real life, but like way worse and way faster with anonymity.
right. Exactly.
Just real quick, because this ties into the security issue. So I did some just searching, and there is something at docs.terra.money signing with the multi-sig account, but there's a couple on terra.money where it says not found anymore. And then a couple below that, it says Terra multi-sig. And then it says the site is multi-sig.money. And it looks like a complete rug job, like this anchor thing where it's just white. And it says, manage your multi-sig by connecting your Terra Station wallet here, a Chrome extension. So I think there's already somebody that is trying to scalp. So just be careful. just be careful if you're researching this multi-sig. Like the four search down looks like a complete scam to me.
Don't ever enter your seed phrase. Like just don't do it.
Well,
the thing is, people got on Apple's ass big time about, you know, the walled garden app store and the security model. And, you know, you have all the people that are like, well, you know, Android's better or Microsoft better or whatever, because they don't, you know, quote unquote, do this or what have you. But this is the problem. Like, you know, if the random video game app that you buy in the app store is going to get you, you know, your bank account stolen, you're probably going to like think twice about playing video games again on the app store. So I don't know, mass adoption, you're sort of stuck to some extent with a bit of a walled garden.
Well, it's what it tells you. People are very anti, like the hard Web3 maxis. Like I'm a Web3 maxi, but I also live in reality sometimes. We need a lot of these Web2 platforms to either facilitate the transition into Web3, or we actually need some degree of centralization in real life in order to make sure that, you know, things that actually need to be centralized are centralized. Like we need some centralized things. We realistically do. For now anyways, right?
Yeah, it's like the ticketing platform you guys are talking about. Same concept. I mean, like, what, you're going to buy tickets from random person on the internet, or are you going to buy some from somewhere that like is known for and has built a reputation on selling tickets to events that are actually real and you know, and these tickets actually work, right? It's the same you have to have some centralization in some elements because like that's how to some extent trust is formed through time and with repetitive interactions.
Yeah, we're not there yet for decentralization, but we're trying, and all of you here are part of that. So
Guys, I got to run. Thanks, Trevor, for jumping on and explaining the multi-sig. In my spare time, we'll see if I can futz around with it, make it work. The real one.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
I can jump on if you need help real quick or something. But, you know, you'll be fine. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks. Hey, Lucky. Lucky's here. What's up, Lucky?
What's up? How you guys doing?
What's going on?
Not much. Just listening. All the stuff you did.
You had a theory about some of this.
No. I was just listening. No, I was excited. I wanted to share with you the other day. I got from Coinbase to Terra for less than $2 through KuCoin.
It's not too bad. What did you do? You send Wrapped Luna, or what did you do? Or you sent?
No, what I did was I actually went to USDT on Coinbase, and then I went to USDC on Coinbase, and then USDC I went to KuCoin, and then KuCoin I went to UST, and then I went to Terra, and it cost me for $5,000 only a $2 complete fee for all that.
Yeah, you could also do, by the way, you could send the simplest route, by the way, if people are interested, is you can actually send Wrapped UST or Wrapped Luna. You can send it to the Ethereum address, not ETH address, but like, you know how there's a, when you go to UST on KuCoin, you hit deposit, there's two addresses you could use. You could use an ETH address, or you can use a Terra address, and you can actually send it to that, and it will have the same, it should have the same transaction fee as like sending Tether, because it's basically an ERC-20 situation. And then when you send out of KuCoin, you don't have to convert it. They just sort of give you credit for it. So there's not a transaction fee to swap, in other words. And you can basically send it out. And I think it was like 0.1 Luna or something it used to be. I don't know if they've lowered that fee or not. But that fee out of KuCoin is annoyingly in Luna, which
That's why I've been going UST lately, because I'm not paying that fee in Luna anymore out of KuCoin. I've been trying to figure out the cheapest way.
Oh, yeah. So I didn't realize. So if you send it out as UST, they charge you less, I guess.
It's only $2.
Okay. Yeah. So doing it via Luna may not make sense because it's like 0.1 Luna. And obviously, depending on the price of Luna, it's going to be a little bit more expensive. But
right.
Anyway,
right.
But those are ways to sort of like cut down steps in theory, is just send the Wrapped coin, if you're a Coinbase user, to KuCoin to swap. You can also technically use like MetaMask and then Terra Bridge and whatnot, but then you have even more hops and more fees on the Ethereum network, which are just a pain in the ass.
That's why I feel like for $5,000 for $2, I feel like that's a hell of a deal. But if someone can get me under $2, let me know.
Yeah, if the goofballs at Coinbase can like get us our Terra native assets, that would be pretty much.
What you do is you find a friend that's a whale, like Steffi, and you just wire him $1,000.
And Venmo him.
Just Venmo him $1,000.
Yeah, I'll take care of it for you.
I can only imagine
it'll only take a few months later, I'm sure you'll get your money. Don't worry.
Right. Exactly.
But those are some tactics. And I don't know why it's taken so long in terms of like Gemini and Coinbase, but I think everybody got the ERC-20 versions quick because it's easy to add an ERC token, because like everybody's tooled up for Ethereum-based receipts and transmissions, and they have all of the wallet infrastructure set up and they're good to go. When it comes to like Terra, for some reason, they seem to have more trouble sort of making that switch. But they don't have that problem with Atom, which is interesting, right? Like, there's nothing that different about like the upgraded Cosmos network versus Columbus 5 in that regard. I don't know why like there's that delay. Maybe it's just like developers; they just have this long schedule and they have a hard time getting to these things because there's so many changes in crypto. I'm not really sure. Any theories on that? Have you heard anything?
I haven't. I mean, it's the same thing with the Voyager people that were waiting to get out of Luna too. It's just like, what's taking them so long, right? It's like,
I don't think they're going to until the people that they work with, like Coinbase and I don't know if they go through Gemini and Coinbase, but I think they're waiting for them to get it first.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing. The same theory.
Like, so yeah,
I wanted to ask something on the Luna piece. You know how you go through the 21 to 24 day burn? I was thinking of, if every day I just burn one, do you think overall over the year, if I keep that strategy up, like every day I buy one, burn one, and just let that go for 365 days. I'll just keep compounding every 21 to 24 days overall.
I would build a bot that does that if you want to do that.
Like, because what I was thinking was
so much work.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's fun to click the buttons, but I was thinking like every day there's some ARB. So I'm like, if I just get on a 30-day rotating burn, so I'm at least getting one back every 21, 24 days, like I at least I'm continuing like a machine, just burn, well, burn, the buy,
reason,
burn,
the reason
buy.
Why, so when the LTV changed, what I did was like, you know, I wasn't ready to sort of like go all in and use all my borrow power. And I was like, you know, I'll just take a little bit of that LTV that I don't need anymore. Like, I will take that bonded Luna, and I went ahead and like set it to burn. And then a few days went by, because remember, it's every 3 days there's a batch. You don't have to do it every day, right?
Right.
So I approximated it, and I just got a little bit more. I was like, okay, the price of Luna's holding. I'll you know, run a little bit more. And the downside with having some bonded Luna in burn is you can't use it to borrow off of it, number one. You can't use it to provide as collateral, number two, right? And then number three, you couldn't sell it in an emergency either, if that's relevant to some people, right? Like some people are, if they want to manage LTV, the most aggressive way they could do it is to sell their Luna. But if I burn a little bit each time, what happens is especially if I'm not needing to borrow off of that, right? It doesn't have any like specific function otherwise, then the yield from bonded Luna will not be as much as the arbitrage rate by swapping again, more than likely. So that's why it makes sense to go ahead and burn it if you're not going to use it. The other alternative would be like, let's say you thought maybe you'd want to use it. You could basically like borrow a bunch of UST off of it, park it and earn for a while, maybe manage an LTV around, you know, whatever the new number is, 75%. And then you can like pay down that if you have to, but you have it ready there in UST earning a reasonable yield. You're also getting anchor tokens along with that, if that's something that you care about. And then you can so really the strategy has a lot to do with whether you're going to sell bonded Luna or any Luna, and you need to have access to it to sell. And the second thing is whether or not you're going to use it as functional collateral at some point during this process.
Yeah,
if that's so
like,
not the case.
I'm keeping that all separate, and I'm like, I want another part of my portfolio that's an evolving door of like Luna, B Luna that's coming back to me that I'm just arbing like every 3 days. And just, I'm just going to do that for a year to see what happens. And like, that's totally separate than my collateral. That's totally separate than my Stator Labs. Like, I have shit everywhere, but I want
this
other strategy to be running.
You're basically doing like an ARB DCA. And
yes,
you're like, some days you get less, some days you get more, but other times you might get like a 1-to-1 Astroport, right?
Yes.
So one of the nice things about like doing a little bit at a time is, let's say, you know, suddenly Astroport goes back to 1-to-1 for whatever reason, and now you can just swap directly and you can get a whole pile of it and all at one time convert to Luna if you want to as well. So it just depends on, yeah, your strategy really has a lot to do with like how much access to your Luna do you need to have if you're planning on trading it versus the collateral aspect. And that's the key. Once you know, like, for example, like the reason with current Luna price action, the reason why I didn't go too bonkers, like burning most of my bonded Luna with that LTV changes, I don't know what price action is going to do. And, you know, if there is some possibility that Luna could drop to 30 to 40, like I'm just going to go nuts buying a lot of it. So I want to have that borrow capability available at those bottoms. And I don't want to be tied up in like a burn process and not have access to that necessarily, right? So that was kind of how I was looking at it. The other thing is, I was watching, by the way, like I have about maybe, I'm trying to think how much, at this point, about a quarter of my position, or maybe a fifth, I think, is sitting in Stator Labs, and it's running on that auto compounder. And that thing's a pretty good nonstop, you know, money printing press too for Luna, because it's converting everything over to Luna each time. And it's a nominal like 3% fee for doing so, but
the
you're getting that constant
LP, right?
Compounding.
Which one, LP?
I just did the well, yeah, the LP also makes pretty good money too, because it's got the yield off of the LP, and you get that Stator token rewards. But like just the staking on Stator and having an auto compound is pretty good too.
What's
cool about
doing...
it is
go ahead, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, one other feature that's cool about that is like the Luna that's accumulating in like is separate from your primary like stash. So it actually shows you, of course, on Stater, like how much have I made in rewards. And you can then also look at that and go, wait a minute, like I'd like to just undelegate like this piece of it. So if you want to undelegate some of that, you could. And what's nice about that is that you could then burn an ARB that if you want to, right? So you could actually take your yields in Luna, and then you could just start playing more games with that too. So there's just, I think having a little bit of variety in the like portfolio perhaps can be helpful. It would be nice though if like Stater came out with a scheme where, okay, you have your Luna staked there, but they'll give you a like bonded Luna asset in trade for that you can get liquid, right? Instantaneously. That would be amazing. And then you could go and borrow using that instead of having to like unstake anything into a new product. I don't know how Stater's new implementation is going to work, but it'd be amazing if you could just leave your shit staked there and then you could borrow off of that. And in the background, that's auto compounding. So your auto compounding yields go to you, right? You keep that. And then the collateral benefits, whatever those would be on Mars or on like, you know, whatever, you could additionally get some collateral benefit from that while still getting some of the auto compounding, still getting all the airdrops and all that. Because right now with Bonded Luna, you lose all your airdrops too, which is kind of weak, right?
Yeah. I was going to ask, you know, I'm struggling right now between keeping still a big chunk on Nexus, because I'm thinking Stater's rewards are outperforming the Nexus piece. I don't know if you've kind of done the math or what your thoughts are there.
Well, the Nexus, you're talking about to do the like that V1 vault where you just simply like get the anchor.
Yeah.
There's a vote that's about to pass on Nexus that's going to basically push the LTV up to 45%. So I think the yield on Nexus is probably going to be closer to like maybe closer to like 13% or something soon. So that might be still worthwhile with the new change. Yeah, because they haven't moved their LTV slider at Nexus. It's still at 45%, you know, auto-managed. And I believe they're going to move that up to the 75%. That way they're depositing more. They're borrowing more and depositing that UST on Anchor, and that's what's getting you the PSI token during that time. The other thing too is right now, like the Terra alts have been like hammered down to oblivion, and some of them are like really close, like Nexus's token. I know like plenty of people that bought too high that got wrecked, but it is actually at like close to the IDO price or the initial coin offering, like if you KYC'd. So once you get to that price, you know, you're going to find some buyers. And it may flatten out. I think the issue has been like token emissions of PSI, which have dramatically gone down. They've gone down because their LP rewards have gone down, and it's gone down also because the what's the other thing that happened? The staking rewards have sort of like settled down a bit too. So the emissions are not quite as high as they used to be, and are being distributed fairly widely. You still have a lot of PSI token though in airdrops that's coming out of the people that are staking their Anchor. If you guys have noticed, if you're like staking your Anchor rewards from borrowing, you get those PSI tokens, and it's pretty hefty actually. Airdrops, pretty good. But and those probably contributed to some of the sell pressure. So I think if the new bots and things that like we had recommended they consider building to like you know, more trading platforms and more ways to like leverage automatically manage leverage and whatnot that Nexus is doing, hopefully they have figured out ways to use some of that arbitrage like profits in the background as a fee to either buy back PSI token or like something. But we did recommend that they don't give out the Nexus PSI rewards anymore, right? In PSI tokens for the actual, because like a lot of people will convert that to N Luna or whatever, which then they can extract as B Luna from that vault, right? Like that's how that works. And so I think plenty of people have told them like, hey, you know, we'd rather just like auto compound Luna. Like, why in the world do we need to have all these steps? And it just creates selling pressure for the PSI token for no obvious reason. Like it's not that's not really a utility for the Psi token, in a sense, unless they're trying to like sort of sell their Psi tokens. Like, I don't know, like how the protocols, how they see it, but I think they could create like much better tokenomics, which I believe that they're working on. Cause I'd really gone into that with them at depth to like make a better situation for the PSI investor.
That's why I'm struggling between, like, I have quite a bit of Nexus and Stater, and I'm like, should I just move everything to Stater? Because I'm liking their roadmap more and more as, you know, we jump on these AMAs with them versus the Nexus piece. But, you know, I still keep somewhat of the risks across the different protocols just in case something ever happens.
Yeah, they do. They do. The Stater people have been executing pretty well in terms of strategy, and also their overall concept is a fairly good broad ranging vision. So the direct conversations I've had with them have been, they're pretty confidence building in terms of their ability to accomplish what they want to do. So that's good. So I don't know. I don't know what that means for like the different tokens either, by the way. There's the platforms and then there's like the tokens, and whether a person should like buy those or not, that's a wholly different conversation probably. But, let me prop up Luis real quick. He had, and then and Learn Crypto after that had some comments.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime back in on a earlier topic on,
yeah, sure,
on the sort of hypothesis of why we don't have native Luna or native UST on Coinbase. So historically, a lot of the reasons that they bring in the wrap tokens is because they don't go under the same regulatory scrutiny. So I think there's my hypothesis, and I think there's a lot of consensus on this, is that there's not enough decentralization according to how they look at these things because of Terraform Labs. And so the way they get around it is to use the wrapped ERC-20 tokens.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. Yeah.
I don't know when, or I think there's going to have to be more regulatory clarity before we get native Terra on a platform like Coinbase.
Although I kind of like the idea that like, my stuff gets obfuscated through like a non KYC element. So
yeah, I do as well. I mean,
I might continue that workflow even if Coinbase gets native assets personally. I don't know. We'll see.
I use Stellar. So I use XLM because it's basically free from a fee standpoint. I move that over to KuCoin and then immediately convert it and get the UST or Luna. Few more steps and you do have some price exposure, but if you're quick enough, it's usually not material.
Yeah, I prefer to have a little bit of obfuscation in the process personally, but
I was going to say, you guys talk about secret, but I mean, really going through KuCoin somewhat is similar, right? You're going into a big vault and you're coming back out. You don't know where you're going, essentially, right?
I mean, so on paper. I saw a project that's launching on Terra, and it was called Terra Nato Cash. And that's all I'll say.
Yeah, they're doing that, and also Void Protocol too, right? Like there's a couple, yeah, that are essentially mixers to kind of but the thing is with mixers, like a person that's investigating on the blockchain knows that you went to via a mixer. So like, you know, if you're sending your $1 billion through it, like, you know, obviously it's going to be noticeable. So these are good for like small transactions that you might want to send a little bit of money over to, like, you know, Alice or something to function on a debit card or something like that. You wouldn't really be able to hide the fact that you use that service. So that's something that people should be aware of.
There's also TerraBay, which is another mixer.
What are they doing? Basically, same thing.
Yeah, I think they're following Void more or less, and they have they're doing some NFT stuff similar to Lavana, but nothing in particular.
Do you tend to use these services?
No, TerraBay is not out, similar to Void. I don't think that those are going live. The only betas that I've been a part of is Cato and Aperture. But I also saw Vertex put out some stuff, Cephi as well. Did you see that they were talking about, I guess, February for something?
You mean for their money market?
Yeah, something with...
I mean, so their 4X?
Yeah.
Their 4X? Yeah, I did see that. I don't know. I didn't get a chance to sort of go into depth with that. Are they doing a full release apparently, or?
I don't know. It just came through my radar, and I wanted to bring it up with you just to see if you had dived into it, but I did not get into it otherwise. But it's exciting to see that.
Yeah, we definitely need the money market. I just don't know. I'm curious what that means to us as like investors. Like, are there some interesting pools that we can make some sort of yields on, or is there some kind of, you know, is there an incentive situation there? Like, I wonder what the benefits to us are more short term.
Yeah, I mean, it's they're launching a testnet, which is similar to like I don't know if you guys have messed with Prism, but they have the Prism testnet out. And I went and refracted and just took a look. You can get a faucet for your testnet account. They give you 5,000 UST. So hopefully that one for Vertex is similar, where we can go on and actually mess around with it and see what it looks like.
Yeah, maybe get a little bit of pre-alpha as far as like what it does and like what kind of options you'll have in terms of playing on there.
Yeah, FX perpetuals and FX spot markets. And then they did tell you, I think, oh, I see you commented. I think they mentioned in one of the threads, maybe it's in the Medium article, that it's going to be a bunch of the, you know, British pound and euro and a few things. Oh, yeah, euro, UST perpetual, CHT perpetual, and the, I guess, Australian dollar perhaps perpetual.
Yeah, exactly. There's all sorts of like contracts available to kind of play the those currency markets a little bit.
Yeah, but to the privacy ones, I know it's Void and Terra Bay are the two big ones as far as I'm aware.
But you know, the thing is, I don't know how many people in the crypto space are like pro Forex style people that are going to really take advantage of that. I don't know what kind of growth trajectory Vertex is going to have exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think similar to that, it could almost be like Mirror, where you kind of get people that are screwing around synthetic stocks for fun. But, you know, unless you're a Forex trader who has perhaps a lot of Bitcoin or something and you want to move it over to Luna to do it there. But, you know, you have all that exposure to other exchanges that already do Forex. So it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds. But I've been watching it since you mentioned it.
Yeah, conceptually should create a whole lot of utility and improved functionality for the other non-UST stablecoins. That's sort of where the big, I think, promise lies, if you ask me, but we'll see how it goes. Let me hop on Ryan, or actually let's learn crypto. Do you have another comment? And then Ryan after that?
Yeah, it's kind of an old one, but so I think one of the things that we're kind of maybe forgetting with the Nationals thing is that they're in the NL East. And in the NL East, I don't know, for those of you that don't follow baseball, you play most of your games within your division. Obviously, there's a bunch of, you know, you play everyone else, but not as much as you play the people in your division. And the people that are in the Nationals division and the people that are going to be watching those home games at National Stadium are Philadelphia, Miami, Atlanta, and New York City. I mean, I know it's the Mets and not the Yankees, but so I think that's like another, like, I know you talked about like the whole like Eastern corridor being a lot of wealth, but all those baseball fans that are going to be watching those games are in those big markets. I mean, it's kind of interesting that Miami's, you know, one of them, since they're kind of, you know, diving into the whole Bitcoin adoption thing. But I just think that's something that maybe we're kind of like forgetting about, is like on those games, like who they're going to be playing does matter too, because those are going to be the, you know, the foreign eyeballs kind of looking at, you know, the Terra, you know, branding and stuff.
Although I don't know how far the branding extends to, like, I just don't know how far that branding extends. It seems like it has more to do with like in stadium and that like box area as a sponsor or something like that. I just don't know where this goes in terms of like other, like if you're in Miami and you're visiting DC and you watch a game, I guess it's one thing, but I don't know if it's going to have any relationship to like promoting Terra on like non-home games and stuff like that. I don't know if they provide any details about this, like what specific advertising we're getting for this money. Like, I'm not even sure.
Typically, like, I know that they said that they're getting the box like right behind like home plate area. So I think that's going to be probably, you know, front and center on, or I would at least imagine that it's going to be somewhat front and center on TV as far as, you know, behind the batter's box. But I mean, yeah, I guess that's a good point, is like, I don't know how much, you know, sponsored advertising there would be beyond just like the branding around the stadium as far as, you know, the box or whatnot. I had a question for Lucky too. I know you talked about, you kind of really quickly went through your onboarding ramp. Would you mind breaking it down for me again? Cause I'm going to probably be shooting some cash over today and maybe I'll give it a try.
So I'll just do it real fast. So last night I took $5,000 on Coinbase. I bought USDT. It raised it up to $5,010. Then I bought USDC and it brought that down to $5,005. Then I moved that to KuCoin. That cost me like $2 or $3. And then from KuCoin, I bought UST. So I went back down to $5,000. And then I went from KuCoin to Anchor or my Terra wallet. And that cost me $2. So for $5,000, it cost me $2 overall.
Although lucky, I think you got just lucky, literally, because sometimes it goes the other direction. The arb rate between Tether and UST on KuCoin is not always in your favor.
Right.
So
right.
Sometimes you'll lose money at that point. So I think at the end of the day, like what some of the guys have been saying as far as like sending a super cheap coin over.
Well, this is where I was frustrated last night because I kept doing that. But every time you would buy on Coinbase, there's a $25 fee with $5,000. Like if I was going to buy XLM, if I was going to buy Litecoin, if I was going to buy ETH, the transaction fee was $25. So I think with the ARB,
your connection's like coming in and out there a little bit.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Your connection's coming and going a little bit.
You're using regular Coinbase. Yeah, I probably should have mentioned I use Coinbase Pro. The fees are obviously much cheaper. One of the tricks I found too, in case anyone hasn't tried this, is when you're doing an ACH from your bank, through Coinbase Pro and then transfer it through to your Coinbase Pro, you don't have the same holding period. I don't know if that's just a glitch, but that's how I've been doing it. So I'll transfer up to my daily limit into Coinbase and transfer it to Coinbase Pro.
Oh, that's super interesting to know.
You still have a holding period.
I think he's saying the holding period is like less somehow.
Daily 500 or even 1,000. Yeah, you still have some sort of limit.
Can you guys hear me now? Like, am I better or not? Limit,
but I've been able to afford it. Let me throw 1,000 into Coinbase. I move it to Coinbase Pro same day within minutes, and then buy XLM, move it to KuCoin.
Cool. Let me get Ryan on for a moment. He's been waiting a bit. Comments, guys?
Hey, CeFi. Thank you for letting me speak. So I saw you on the AMA yesterday or last night for Loop. And kind of we were talking about alternatives. I just wanted to kind of get your viewpoint on Loop. Sometimes it seems like it's the redheaded stepchild of Terra.
Well, it's kind of a community size project as opposed to like Astroport, which is more of a like, you know, mega VC funded type thing. So, you know, that probably plays a role in, you know, what they're able to achieve and such. I think at the end of the day, as far as Loop is concerned, number one, as a DEX, you just need to make sure that the rates you're getting as far as fees and whatnot to use that DEX makes sense. So kind of like compare and contrast some different trades. If you have to buy Luna, for example, and kind of see what is being charged there. There's also differences in, by the way, just for reference, there's differences in the Luna to B Luna arbitrage rate between the different DEXs at any given moment, in case anyone cares about that. That RB app that you can install on Telegram can like clarify that issue for you and kind of tell you where the best trade is. Otherwise, yeah, Loop. I got interested in Loop early on because I thought it had one of the more prominent sort of influencer accounts on Twitter, which was interesting. Their Medium articles and their informational stuff has been like a service to the community. I think they're looking at continuing that from an education standpoint and from like incentivizing writing articles on there. And apparently you can get paid pretty good for writing an article on there. And they didn't have any problem with if you're a writer who wants to post something interesting about Terra, let's say, for example, how to use a multi-sig wallet. You could create like an FAQ style like write up and post it there and get paid in Looper tokens or whatever. I don't know. It's an interesting little project. I don't have too much sort of detail about the thing. And they were talking about quite a few projects and cross chain things that they were working on.
Is this for Loop?
Yeah. Oh, but they're a smaller group.
They're actually not small at all. Loop has the background.
Oh, they're not.
Called, okay. There's something called Loop Ventures now in the background. They're very corporate-y, it feels like. And they have a joint venture with TFL right now that, I mean, it's a parallel project to something that I had been working on. That's like a giant, turned into a giant monster now, about rolling out content to fill the void in, it really, it's just educational resources for non-crypto native, Terra native, and not like active in protocols or, you know, those who haven't taken a deep dive in digestible content. They actually just launched Loop Learn, which is going to be their learning arm through Loop Ventures. So I think it's Loop Ventures is separate but related. Loop Learn, I think, is an arm of Loop Ventures, I want to say. But they rolled out some content already. If you want to take a look at it, it's Loop Learn something, something. You got to go find it. But last time I talked to them, they were looking at rolling out 20 plus pieces of content per month. I don't speak for them, so don't quote me on that. But there's a lot of projects filling the void in education right now that you'll see. You'll see all that, all those resources trickling in, and then ideally accelerate in terms of its, you know, their release.
I've watched those videos. They're actually really, really good. And I think TFL did a very good job with them. My question on Loop is, I know they're trying to be that gateway, and watching the first couple of videos, I wonder if they're going to be able to pull it off positively. And once they get new people kind of onto the blockchain platform, their plan is to have it kind of sticky, have that user be sticky to the Loop platform, whether it be the DEX, cross-chain, NFTs, Loop Ventures, and et cetera.
Was that a question?
No, I guess it was more of a follow-up statement.
I mean, as much as that's true, you can't blame a platform for wanting to, you know, drive traction to their platform, right? But the thing is, they're not going to be the only ones doing this. And they might be the first, they might be the second, who knows? You know, it's kind of up to the platform to build in that stickiness. There's no problem with the product and a team behind the product wanting to drive traction to their platform, right? It's when you gate things that we run into a problem.
On a slightly side note, when it comes to Loop, they do have the ability to get the Loop token on Pylon Gateway, and I opened up a Pylon Gateway on their, on Pylon, right around the time it came out, and I threw, I think, like $1,200 in there, just for, you know, you to kind of like picture what that looks like. And then, so, and the rewards on that right now have been $260 worth of Loop token, and the APY that's been listed for that Pylon Gateway pool was something in the neighborhood of like, I think, 30 some odd percent. So it's done okay. It's like I just use some, I use Pylon for that, like just using Anchor Borrow, and I threw a little bit of money in there just for fun, just to kind of see like how Loop performs over time, and how like well Pylon Gateway works. Because when Pylon first came out, it was like, you know, a bunch of different coins and things got released there, and everyone sort of just aped into different things. But so far, like, I'm in the green there. It's not a big deal. I, you know, it's one of those nice things about sort of lossless investments. Now, would I have done better if I had just bought, like, I don't know, more Luna with that money? Probably. But it is a low-risk way. And as long as the APY sort of, like, beats the cost to borrow on Anchor, which for most of the time it obviously has, it's pretty reasonable. It's performed better than, like, the Orion token, by the way, in terms of yield on Pylon, which is done kind of shitty. I'm not sure why. I'm actually happier with Loop than I am with Orion right now. So go figure. But Tsukuyomi, are you there? Did I say your name right? Maybe.
Yeah, it's correct.
Good. Good. Go ahead.
I guess I'm the smallest bug in Luna here. I'm from the Philippines, and I earn like 400 monthly as a service crew. It's very hard accumulating right now. I came in late to Luna, just late last year, around November, December. Is it best for me just to DCA into Luna and forgo joining the Prism Forge, the Astro, the Mars, What do you think?
Probably so. Although it's really hard to say for sure, like what's going to do what. But the IDO tokens, like I think they're more interesting. Like if you already have some blue chip things and you have a sizable like savings in something like that that earns like a fairly consistent yield. That would be me personally. Like I have not put a huge amount into any of the like, you know, project tokens personally. So, you know, I look at it from the angle of if I were to borrow with Anchor and I get some UST, is the return for this thing good enough to make it worth borrowing for, is something I kind of consider in my like management of that asset or whatever. And yeah, but any kind of like entry into Prism and this and that, like do so in maybe like if you're small, do so in very small quantities and just sort of understand the price action a little bit before you go crazy. Yeah, especially if you're kind of a small investor, the simplest thing is to create either a, like you said, a dollar cost averaging strategy into just Luna, or maybe like another way to look at it would be you could say, if you have enough Luna and you feel comfortable with how much like yield you're getting, you know, an option is to take that yield and use it to buy some of these other things you might be interested in. So you have the price like exposure intact for Luna, but then you can diversify a little bit here and there if you want to play around. The X Prism token looks very interesting, and its value accrual model also looks interesting. But as far as like what the short term price action will do when some token emissions happen and whatnot, nobody really knows. So like even myself, even with like how much I bought, like I didn't go too crazy with it. Like, so I've been kind of careful about entering into those things. And if I get like a much better price or, you know, down the line, if it's discovered that, hey, look, the value accrue model for the token is really working really well, then I might maybe go more aggressive with it. You know, once we have like proven that that's going to work. But, you know, because there's the other thing, too, is it's not just the Prism token. Like you might ask yourself, well, am I going to get some advantages, say, for example, of refracting my Luna and maybe do the P Luna, Y Luna and then like stake your Luna, for example. So that will give you Prism tokens. You have other ways of earning like sort of community farming that, I think. So watch for that, too, as maybe the more like maybe at least from a price perspective, lower risk situation. Now, I don't know where Prism is in, with like its audits and stuff. So there's always, of course, some smart contract risk that's more so than just simple staking. So always keep that in mind as well. So I would say the more the harder it is for you to make money, like in real life, the more careful you should be with your money and like protect it and don't do any kind of don't do too much weird speculation on things unless you fully understand them and you're comfortable with them. You know, at the same time, when you're young, that's also the time when, small bets in like highly speculative things can pay off. But, I think it really depends on where you see yourself 10 years from now and like where as an investor and whatnot. And that's going to be different for everybody. So, does that answer your question? Or I don't know if I just talked in circles, but you know.
No, it's okay. It's okay. The main problem for me is, yeah, the limited amount I can throw into it. So I'm thinking about, yeah, just continue DCA into Luna. It's in B Luna right now at Anchor. It's just around 30 Luna. So if I get liquidated, it'll be all gone. So I'm very
don't get liquidated. But if it's you're dealing with small amounts, don't make your life complicated. Like, you know, I think 99% of my like Terra portfolio is in Luna or something. So yeah, don't like if that's any indication, like I think that's probably the safe bet right now.
Yeah, I guess I'll do that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. Let's see. Hey, Ryan, a comment from you again?
Yeah, I got a quick question for you. I think from what I understand, you know how to build bots and stuff like that. Is that correct?
Well, not so much build them. Like I kind of understand the principles behind them and like how to use them more than I know how to actually like do the programming to build one. But like what question do you have about it?
Well, I mean, I would love to kind of bridge that knowledge gap, but I'm not a tech savvy person. So I was just kind of wondering, maybe you could direct me to some resources that would be a good starting point to understand it more.
Yeah, all I would do quite simply is if you have a KuCoin account, I would look at what they've created. Those are some interesting possibilities. If you want to test, look at another possibility that's PioNext. They have similar types of bots as KuCoin, and it's a pretty easy to use app. And the way I would recommend understanding any piece of software is like literally push every button. So go and like to the custom, you know how there's a custom button for these things. So there's an automated system where it'll fill in some parameters for you in terms of buy and sell prices and this and that. And you'll start getting a good feeling for what these things do. But basically a bot essentially is attempting to automate in some form or fashion the buys and sells that are taking place instead of you doing to some kind of trading, okay? And the basic concept of it is that there's several types depending on what you want your money to do. Do you want the traded money to go back into auto compounding into buying more of what you're trading? In other words, for example, like if Luna is at $50 and then it goes to $60 and you sell a portion of it. Are you selling a portion of it because you're going to go to like McDonald's and go eat with that money? Or are you going to sell a portion of it because you want to then like buy Luna when it goes down again, right? These are different like possible outcomes. And depending on what kind of possible outcome you want in terms of what happens to your traded money, like one thing about the different styles of bots and stuff is just like automating buying and selling for you with a more robust manner than just simply, or maybe robust is not the right word, a different way than just simply putting in limit orders to buy things. Okay. I think KuCoin's bots are pretty neat. I think gate.io does a better job with some of the parameters it allows you to set. So those are worth like just going on there, like making a little account. And I don't think you have to even make an account. You just go to the spot trading section and you go to the grid bot section and you start playing in there, you'll see all the different possible settings for these things. So the settings tend to be like price ranges and then like price differences whereby you would want to sell, like 1% move up or 5% move up or down. And then like methods whereby the bot buys back the asset that you want versus exiting to say Tether or something like that. So that's kind of the basics of it. I haven't found really great YouTube videos actually on this, and that's I think it's a subject of it'd be a nice it'd be a very good YouTube comprehensive video to do actually for somebody like that, where you go through each type and you go, hey, like what exactly does this thing do? And then there's no way to specifically compare and contrast the like financial outcome, because if just because you back test say a rebalancer versus a grid versus a some other tactic, you can have literally infinite permutations of ways to set up these things in terms of how you like buy and sell and how what kind of range you put in, that it's really hard to compare apples to apples and say, hey, wait a minute, like today if I was going to go into one of these things and I'm going to go look at a rebalancer bot or a grid bot or an infinity bot, there's like several types essentially. And if I'm going to do this, like, you know, which of these is going to give me the best outcome? And the reason why you can't figure out the best outcome is because you have no way of telling what the future looks like. And because you can't see the future, you can't really compare and contrast. You could say, for example, on some sites, none of these three particularly, but like some advanced analytics people, they'll backtest a particular strategy against the previous price action of a coin or against any asset. They'll just look at it and go, okay, like how did this perform between, you know, January and December of last year, for example. If we apply the data from historical data to it, like what kind of APY did I get? But the thing about these things is they're reliant on volatility and they're reliant on other elements. Like, for example, did you buy when the price of the coin was high? Did you buy when the price of the point, the price of the coin was sort of relatively low? Did you buy in the middle somewhere, right? So the starting point has a lot to do with your final outcome, because essentially a deterministic outcome, and you have no way of sort of like predicting sort of like a random quantum future. So essentially, all you can really do is look at the past and go, hey, okay, based on this approximate volatility, this is the kind of yield I got with these parameters. But so any bot you set in a backtest situation, the only question you have to ask yourself really is, in that context would be like, okay, are there certain setups with technical trading bots that would actually lose money? And if the answer is yes, then that's the first thing like that you are testing for. Ultimately, like, is this thing going to somehow end up making me buy high and sell low? Because really in any bot infrastructure, if you enter a position and you're buying a certain amount of a coin, right, you're basically immediately exposed to the price action of that coin. And if it happens to go down 50%, there's not a bot that sort of saves you from that, right? Whatever portion of that that you have in your asset, you're going to like be down. And in that context, like you have to think about like the time horizon with which you're going to like play in these things. And this is true of liquidity provider positions. It's true of just simply spot trading. It's true of futures trading. And it doesn't matter what you do. The bottom line is if like you have to have a plan for when the price goes down. What's interesting about the way bots work is they are relatively conservative in terms of the price. Like your price exposure is more conservative with a bot than it would be with just a direct trade. So, for example, if I was particularly fairly poor and I only had, you know, certain options in terms of how to like plug money into something, and I needed to stay reasonably liquid so that like if something happened, I could exit my position. What's interesting about most bot arrangements is if at least 50% of your like asset is in stablecoin and something bad happened, then you're actually like a lot of the time mainly just have the stablecoin there and you can exit some of your position. So how conservative you set that bot might make it less lucrative, but it might make it more cautious because you're now like not spending your stablecoin. So it's like you set the bot up with a mixture of like taking advantage of volatility, but also you set it up as a risk management concept. Does that make sense, Ryan?
Yes. Sorry, the dog. Dogs are
going nuts. That's okay.
I want to follow up on that. So like, what about a bot for like Terra, whether to be manager, anchor, loan to value, take advantage of arbitrage opportunities between Luna v Luna. My concern is I've seen some out there, but they require like your seed phrase, and I don't feel comfortable ever doing that.
Yeah. So the thing is, bots have to have access to your wallet if you're talking about a bot that, you know, is created. So the problem with that is if you just go download some bot from somewhere, so you have to be sure that you know how to read the underlying like code. So if it has a GitHub, for example, and there's code there, and you feel comfortable enough with your Rust skills or whatever, and you have the or actually it doesn't even have to be made in Rust, technically speaking, because you're basically just interacting with a wallet and executing buys and sells. Ultimately, you need to have like enough understanding of those things if you're going to get like an off-chain system to be able to audit whether that's safe or not. Like, how do you know when you connect your wallet, like you said, like your money's just not going to disappear? So that's the thing. So if you get the rudimentary programming ability to do this yourself, then you can be fairly certain that you can keep these somewhat secure. But even then, you'd want to make sure that your bot, wherever it's running, is not going to be hacked. You know, so there are some details to be had, which is why I don't like participate in those kinds of things. I don't try to download my own bots. I don't try to program them. I don't wish to learn how to become like a bot auditor or whatever. Like, I'm not interested in any of that. Like, I think the commercially available options, even though they cost some fees, whether it's Gate, whether it's KuCoin or Pionex, they all seem reasonably safe. And they're exchanges that are like Gate, I don't think has ever been hacked. So they're one of the longest lasting exchanges in Asia that has been sort of like persisted. They know what they're doing. And I think the security of knowing that you're using their infrastructure and paying them a little bit of fee for that, I think is worth it. So, because you make so much arbitrage yield off of those bots that like the fees basically end up negating themselves. The benefit you get if you do it on chain is you get the low fees of Terra while subsequently getting all of the theoretical benefits of the other platforms if it's programmed well. And that's precisely what Nexus is trying to create for us. The last DM I had with Nexus, basically they're looking at optimizing for, first, they felt like it was reasonably easy to produce a 50-50 rebalancer bot. They felt it was pretty easy to provide a couple of solutions like a 70-30 and a 30-70 rebalancer. And what that means is like 50% UST, 50% Luna, and then the others would be like 70% Luna, 30% UST, and vice versa. So that you wind up with like these permutations. And what that is different levels of like your risk tolerance, right? So let's say, for example, I'm taking an anchor loan and I have like, I'm worried about my LTV and I have to be able to like exit to cash to manage my LTV. Maybe like a 30-70, like 30% Luna, 70% UST might be a favorable way to sort of like have it automatically DCA the volatility and essentially get you more Luna for very low, like low risk, right? Because you don't really lose any Luna in this context. If you run it long enough, you should basically be net positive on Luna and in UST, because all it's doing is taking the, every time Luna goes up, it's selling some and moving it to UST. And every time Luna goes down, it's the UST pool's bigger. So now it's buying you more Luna and back and forth all day long, you know, 10 or 20 times a day, and is basically just producing you like sort of free money. Now, the way that the thing works on the rebalancer, though, is they're looking at doing it like a vault. So they'll basically build their vault. They'll make sure that it's audited and make sure that it's working correctly. And then all you have to do is simply deposit in there, and maybe whatever fees they want as far as transaction fees, they could make that go back to Nexus protocol or something like that. There's no reason they should do it for free. They should sort of bring value back to the Psi token holder or something, right? And ultimately, it works out pretty well because Terra's fees are really low, even compared to like exchanges. So you should be able to execute decent trades like that in a vault setup. And that's what they're building us. So we'll see how that goes. They like whether they can actually produce for us like the exact same types of possibilities like that the centralized exchanges have, like, for example, customizability. Like, if you go to KuCoin, you can set your rebalancer to 2% for when it sells and buys, or you can have it add more than one coin, like, you know, like UST, Luna, and Atom, for example, like more than, so adding to the volatility of the system by adding more coins that like trade in different directions, because volatility is what you're trying to capture with those things. And the multi-coin rebalancer is also interesting. Now, on-chain, though, that becomes complicated. Because on a centralized exchange, what's happening is you entering into a bot position, it's literally running a program just for you, which is why the fee is going to be higher. You're essentially running a cloud instance of your, you know, of a program that's specifically running and executed on your particular parameters and with your money. Whereas in a vault like Nexus would do, you're sort of depositing some money and it's sort of just doing it with everybody's money simultaneously. So the moment you enter the vault and the moment you exit the vault, that will tell you how much like yield you've produced over that time. So it's just calculating that in the background and then paying you when you want to exit. So the vault strategy ultimately batches everybody's transactions together. So that what ends up happening is you're doing very few like total transactions and you're not paying a bunch of transaction fees. So like if like 100 of us are in one vault, we're all sharing the transaction fees for that trade, and which makes it practically nothing. And then even if Nexus adds a little bit, for example, and takes some as a fee, then no big deal. No one's going to notice because it's such a small amount of money. It becomes immaterial to us, right? You won't ever really notice that tiny little fee in there. But in KuCoin or one of these places, their fees are larger, but they're also the fees are being levied on each individual user and being, and it's a much heavier sort of like, they're basically making a lot of money off of them, long story short, right? So every time you execute a trade, they're making money, which is a different type of setup. So these are the kind of things to sort of learn. But the simple thing to do would be to grab some of these platforms and just play on them and just look at the settings. Don't even bother spending any money. Just look at the different settings, and I think you'll start getting a quick understanding of like, okay, wait a minute. Like, based on my price of something now, like, how would I lay this out? Like, am I bearish on this coin? And so therefore I should like assume that, the price is going to drop, and therefore how would I set this thing up with that in mind? Am I particularly bullish on something, and therefore I believe it's going to go up? So there's still some speculation involved with setting up these things, which to some extent is why, or even the timing when you set them up, right? Even if it's a 50-50 rebalancer, like if I set it up today and Luna's price is $50, it'd be a very different outcome than if I set it up at Luna at $25 and the price goes up. So there's nothing specific about them that eliminates that immediate price risk entirely, right? But there are sort of like different ways to set them up depending on maybe your directional bias in terms of price and also your ability to tolerate the drop in price as far as risk. And your time horizon is what you have to keep in mind. I think bots are great. If you run them for years, almost like staking, right? Like, you know how you throw staking in, you get auto compounding, and you look fire and forget. You don't even have to worry about it. It's making you money in the background, right? So similarly with a bot, if you can run it for a long time, I think it's going to work out better for you than like short term. I think it's pointless to sit and do like I'm going to run this for a month. It doesn't make any sense to me. Like, you might as well just either buy and hold or buy exponentially down, and it would be just as effective. Profits over wages. What's up?
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Ryan. Thanks for the question. Hopefully that gets you sort of the ball rolling. But really, like, even what I just said now, I can barely find videos on YouTube that cover those basics as far as, like, how to set up these bots appropriately. A lot of the, by the way, be careful. A lot of the idiots that are writing the articles, doing the YouTube videos about bots, they're just trying to get YouTube views because they're trying to get like make money off their KuCoin referral link or some shit, right? They're complete idiots. They don't know what they're doing, half of them. And like they just say, oh, I started a bot at so-and-so price, and they make a video and show you 3 months later that they'd made money. And then they show you their referral code and you're supposed to go there and like use KuCoin, and you don't know, you figure, well, I follow what this dude said. But it's not that simple. Most of those videos have not been very, if someone has a really, really great instructive video in terms of setup that works well, I'd share it with me and I'll sort of retweet it or something. But I haven't seen on YouTube a really great one.
If you reach out to me, I don't want to jump in real quick, but there's one called hummingbot.org, which is a pretty heavily backed product that I've used to spin up bots that are your own independent bot, but you do have to get up the seed, and you just basically assume you don't want to put too much money on any of it because it's running on Amazon servers and you don't know what's going to get blocked. And if KuCoin wants to ban you because you're doing arb trading, you know, assume that you're going to lose all your money. So it's not like you're putting in millions of bucks, but you can DM me and I'll help with that.
Yeah, although KuCoin and others are usually fine with connecting to their APIs as far as trading is concerned. Like, so quite a few of the bots that are external, like the ones that are not on exchanges, three commas and like coming in, you know, all these other ones, you can actually connect via the APIs of exchanges. And that's how they make some of their trading fees, is off of bot people. Yeah. So that's pretty common. Yeah. And it's not that more, most of them are pretty safe.
Yeah. It's more an external threat of like, if Amazon knows what you're doing, because, you know, for instance, with Binance, you're in the US, you set up an Amazon instance in Singapore so that you don't have to worry about IP addresses. You could get banned. There's a number of things that could occur, but yeah, they're happy making the trading fees. And obviously, if you had a lot of money, you could deploy it towards stables, which is just shaving off pennies on each trade there. But there's ways to go about it. And like I said, if you want to DM me, Ryan, I can show you what I've done with Hummingbot.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I run. Just wanted to say, talk to you later. I want to talk to Rune a little bit later, so hopefully I'll catch you later.
Yeah, cool. Sounds good.
Yep.
Profits over wages. Do you have some comments, thoughts? Go ahead.
I was just going to say thank you so much for sharing everything. I think this is a super underestimated room because Anchor is a super game changer. I've been using it for maybe 4 or 5 months now. You know, been in crypto for years at this point, but you just taught me something new today. I use this all the time. So you definitely taught me something new, and it's like, I think, a more effective and safer way to kind of go about the market and still hold your positions. So this was awesome information, man. I'm excited to run the recording back. I hope Terra Spaces is recording this.
Yeah, they're there. But hopefully these techniques work out for you. I find that, like, you know, you just want to think about these things like a video game, and you want to think about, like, what prices do you want to be exposed to? Like, you know, everyone's, like, risk tolerance is a little bit different, and how you want to, and the beauty of yield is essentially you can use your yield on things, right? Like whether it's UST yield or on Luna yield. And you could, on the one hand, if you have Luna, you could still have the price exposure to Luna, but then maybe you could use your yield to diversify into some things. On the flip side, if you have UST on Anchor, you can say, hey, look, I made a little bit of money on UST this week. I'm going to take that and I'm going to buy some Luna with that or whatever, right? You can play some different strategies there.
You need, I think you guys talked about it, and if it's repeating, you don't have to go over it again. But do you also use the arbitrage technique with, like, Terra Station, staking, like, Luna and then swapping it out?
Yeah, you mean Luna to bonded Luna?
Yes, yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, yeah, for sure, all the time. Yeah, I do little chunks at a time and do that.
Is it, like, random? I'm going to get in your DMs. I hope you don't mind, because I'm really interested in doing this.
Well, the simplest answer is that the Luna bonded Luna diverges in price usually when there's volatility. And usually that happens when the price of Luna drops. So that's usually the best chance to take advantage of that, because when the price of Luna drops, people are suddenly trying to exit B Luna because they're trying to, like, fix their collateral. So what they're doing is they're like ninja selling their bonded Luna so they can, like, go to UST, which is a mistake. But what they're doing is these are people that are over leveraged who then have to sell their B Luna and like do so at a loss very quickly. But then they cause the arbitrage to go in the wrong direction, and you can take advantage of the other side of it and buy at the bottom. So I like it. I like the bottoms on Luna are much better than bottoms on other coins, because I not only can buy cheap, but I can do, like, things like Kujira where you're getting cheaper Luna. But on top of that, you can get the Luna bonded Luna arbitrage at the exact same time. But you could also borrow at that exact same time at the bottom. And on top of that, you can take that cheap B Luna you got and you could reprovide that as collateral again and kind of, like, secure that position again at the bottom. So, like, bottoms on Luna are, like, super discounted if you include all of that shit together, right? So you have higher purchasing power at the bottom while also getting the discount at the bottom. Like, what else do you want, right? Like, that's about as good as it gets as far as DeFi is concerned. I don't know of that many more scenarios where you get better deals, to me. So, yeah, you hopefully have fun. Yeah, keep having fun.
Thank you so much. Yeah, last thing I want to say, just for shits and giggles, and you don't have to respond if you don't want to, but it's kind of a joke me and my friends do because we all use Anchor. How much LTV are we exposed, Safil?
Oh, how much do I run it at? Or?
Yeah.
Well,
how deep are you?
Well, right now I'm parked at like 75%, but I also took a huge chunk of extra. Well, what happened was when the LTV changed, right? What I did was I took some B Luna and I just burned it so I can arb it again. I took like two swaths of that. And then I got like, I took a big chunk and I borrowed off of it and I just stuck an Anchor Earn, right? So, like, I can basically pay down my LTV with that extra cash anytime.
Oh, nice.
So that's kind of like the tactic I'm using right now. I'm just leaving it ready there to be able to use it at a moment's notice, but then I'm really careful with it because I have to use that to pay down my LTV. But in the meantime, I'm getting the 20% yield off of it. The cost to borrow is like around 4%, right? So, like, you're getting 19.5 there minus the 4% in Anchor tokens. But another tactic I use is, all right, so, like, Remember recently Anchor's price was lower. So I went crazy borrowing then because I'm getting these Anchor tokens. And not only does
really Anchor... They're really cheap.
Yeah, I was getting from like, I was basically getting them for like $1.20 or something. And then now Anchor is $1.90. So I was like, all right, I'll sell my Anchor tokens. I was earning 30% yield on them. So actually my cost to borrow is free because basically I leveraged the fact that like Anchor's token price itself would go up from the bottom. And I sold it and then paid off some of my loan with that. So even you, your Anchor tokens, you can be a little bit strategic and maybe when you sell them, right? So if you prefer to have, if you like the price of Anchor where it is right now, and you just want to hold it because you're getting those borrowing rewards, you could. If you feel like, okay, like Anchor's price has run up, I'm not that interested in holding it right now, I'm going to sell it immediately to pay off my loan, that's certainly an option as well. So that's just some different tactics you could use. Plus Anchor's yield is like 25 to 30%, right, on the token itself. So I'll just simple stake it, right? And I'll be able to sort of get those rewards, you know. And usually Anchor's price will do something interesting over a period of like maybe 3 months. So it's not like a rush job, but you basically get that 30% yield for 3 months while you wait. So that mitigates the cost to borrow in a sense also. And then if the price of the token rises, you sort of have leveraged, you basically leveraged Anchor essentially tokens, but that's a little bit speculative. So you could have that go the wrong way too. So you have to suddenly pay off your loan and your Anchor tokens have gone down. So just kind of keep that in mind. So if Anchor has a big run up the token price, I usually clear it and then start over again and then like pay off my loan with those tokens. But I don't do it every single day necessarily because these, like, you know, I just watch the price action of Anchor, look at what its yield is when it's staked, and maybe try to use that to my advantage. So, yeah, that might be another little tactic you could use. All right. Frugal, what's up?
Hey, guys. I was just listening into the arbitration talk that you guys were having, and, like, I'm happy to, like, share that, like, for the past few days I was trying to mess around with the Terra SDK, and like I've finally made some progress onto like how to use it. So now I can like kind of get price feeds of whatever, like let's say Prism USD, X Prism, Prism, and like on Astroport I can get prices for B Luna and Luna, and like this it's just surprising as to like how little there's content out for people who want to like use Terra SDK. Like there's just like one person, like William, I don't know if other people know him, but like if you just look for Terra SDK, there's just William from TFL who's like showing how to use the Python SDK, and like there's one terabytes like playlist.
You mean to actually like program things, you mean, or what?
Yeah, just so if we want to create our own like bots or something to interact with the Terra blockchain, we would use like a SDK of some sorts. So
Yeah.
This goes back to some of the tooling that I was talking about in terms of building educational resources. In the background, there's a bunch of resources, A, getting built, and B, there's a lot of open source tooling that'll be coming via the Terabytes Academy. One of their core things that they're working on are open source tooling, and that's also with the multi-sig sending more complex messaging. There's also the Terra toolbox that the interns, plus, you know, a lot of the, I would say a lot of the big brain Web3 guys in our ecosystem are also working on open source tooling. That's one with the open source liquidation feature in there, along with the withdrawal contract with no fee. So there's a lot of stuff getting out of there, Lunar Assistance. We also just rolled out, it's called Tiny Angel. Originally, it was Project Angel Dust that I was spinning up, where you can sweep low balances to Angel. A little self-serving coming from that team, but you know, because I'm on that as well. But you know, it gives you, you know, a way to put your low balances to use if you want on withdraw, or you know, just sweeping from your wallet. So there's open source tooling getting added there, as well as from the academy, as well as a couple of other sources. We'll be rolling out some tooling that'll make that a lot easier.
Oh yeah, I think I'm like talking more about like just resources on how to like use the Terra SDK. I'm not
you're
sure.
Saying like, you're saying like educational type stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, like step-by-step type things.
Yeah,
okay.
Kind of. Like, let's say if I want to swap on Afterport, if I want to interact with a smart contract, and then like,
sure.
That's like, things to get you started, but that's like, I guess that's the like the same with every technology that you use, that they give you enough to get started, and then like there's a lot of stuff that you just have to like figure out yourself.
Yeah, well, that as much as that's true, as any like a language matures, or as technology matures, you know, eventually, you know, those gaps get filled in. Everyone's in the process right now. There's a ton of teams working on filling that void right now, especially in the Department of Development, which right now we're setting up the Rails via the Builders Alliance, the TBA, to create workflows and really a set of processes to train developers straight out of school, or you know, Web2 developers transitioning in. There's also the Terra India, spearheaded by Yash, ecosystem dev something for Terra India, that they're working on this as well, specifically for India. It's kind of siloed off, but it's so we can fill that void basically that you're talking about in terms of getting people interested, educating them, forming teams, creating new concepts, launching new projects, getting allocated to current teams, that kind of thing. So it is coming, and I mean, try to be patient, but maybe as you're learning, document what you're doing. Maybe it'll help. You can create resources as you go to help others.
I only got into it because I heard like all the different ARB opportunities that might come up and all the CeFi spaces that we've been having with Prism protocol. So the first step is to like know what the prices are and then like try to swap them at the right prices and so
have
on.
Have you seen the RB bot that's out?
I use it whenever like I want to ARB from Luna to be Luna or so on. So like, know that.
Yeah, there has been, I guess with the news and whatnot, there has been a fair amount of price drawdown in the equities markets. If you kind of happen to look at that, everything from like Apple and tech, pretty much everything is down several percent. And on my like, as far as the altcoin list, honestly, like basically Luna's the least pullback of practically everything. Most things are down something like 9 to 10%, and that might just be a lag and Luna may do the same, but be aware that like there is some definite like crypto action going on right now, and it seems like at least Luna's amongst the strongest of the coins on the market at the moment. So yeah, it didn't like necessarily go berserk going up lately, but at the same time, it's I think performing well relative to the market, especially compared to its all-time high and where everything else is. So just kind of like keep that in mind. In fact, let me pull up some stats here for just a moment. What I like about Voyager's app is, and anyone can download this, by the way, but you can't use it unless you can't use a platform unless you're in the US and that excludes New York. But what's cool about it is you can use the one of the functions on the, it is you can sort all the coins, and they have like around 100 major ones. You can sort them based on which coins are down the most, like every week or every month. So for example, if I look at the daily chart, I can actually just hit the 1 day change sort function and see like what is down the most. So Solana, for example, is down about 12%. I think Curve is down about 13%. And those are sort of the worst for the day in a 1 day change. If I want to look at like, you know, worst for the hour, I can sort based on that. And like, holy crap, like Curve is down 17% on the hour from 1 hour ago, which is a pretty big drop. So what's cool about that is, it's a pretty good method to like buy dips and things. And what's also nice is you can actually pick the coins that you want to sort of star on there, so the ones you care about, and that helps you sort of cone in on things that might be interesting in terms of like coins that are at a discount. Say, for example, if you like Chainlink, oh, holy crap, it's at $16, which is terrible. It's a down 43% for the month, as an example. If you look at the 1 year, though, man, you've got some stuff that's had its butt kicked. Like, you know, Compound is down minus 70%. SushiSwap is down 71%. Aave 67%. Band is 65%. So if you think, like, you know, your Terra position is not doing so hot, I can promise you that practically all of the rest of DeFi is doing worse. So that's, I guess, good for us. Not so good for everybody else. But anyway, any comments on price action or theory, go right ahead. But when the general market falls, just be aware there's a lot of leverage in the system, and that leverage tends to feed into everything. So that's the reason why when people deleverage, if prices go down, the price of even Luna can fall. Nothing's fully independent as long as leverage permeates the markets and as long as arbitrage bots sort of permeate the market. So you're never going to fully escape the total market in terms of price action. Not fully.
Cascading liquidation.
Exactly. So cascading as in, yeah, the leverage in the system is partly why Luna goes up as high as it does, but it's also the same reason why it can go down as well. So you know, what the Lord giveth, you know, he takes away or whatever, something like that. But the, yeah, just be aware of the like market conditions and watch those LTVs, trying to get liquidated needlessly. You don't need to be that degen in my mind to do well. But, and then let me get one last person here and then I think we'll break. We've been doing a good afternoon here. Philip, I think
you haven't broken 8 hours, Steffi. You got to keep going.
like, is there enough to talk about to go that long? That's the question. I tried to add. Yeah, Philip, you there?
Hi, my name is Philip, and I want to ask you a question regarding this macro discussion now, because I'm wondering how do you see the price of Luna developing in this, let's say, a complicated macro environment, because there's a lot of things going on in the general market, inflation discussions, and especially this high beta assets, also crypto and technology stocks are experiencing a difficult time. So what's your take on this for 2022?
I think on this global, I mean, the overall spectrum of things, I think my perspective is that because of its like deflationary nature, tokenomics, the dual network effect of Luna and UST, I think if anything is going to perform well, I think Luna has the highest chance of it. And that's sort of just been my general take. It turns out I happen to be basically right, because that's exactly what happened, right? Like, there's a reason why I moved heavy into Luna early last year, and why so many developers have done the same, and why Delphi Digital and others have been building here. It's because like the tokenomics are superior to practically everything, which basically makes it have a higher network effect and higher like deflationary tokenomic effect than really any asset of all time, which means that if anything's going to be protected in the market, I would say it's relatively speaking Luna. Now that all, of course, if you bought it $1 versus $5 versus 50, you're going to have very different opinions on what that means to you. So it's not to say that prices can't go down, but I think relatively speaking, we talked about this earlier today. Basically my downside target is mostly in the like, you know, $40 to $50 range is where I think a lot of the volume support sits. And I don't think most people in Luna give a crap about the economy. Like, you know, like if you think, like if all the people that buy Luna and why they buy it and what's like almost all the conversations for the last year, almost nobody's like, oh yeah, I'm buying Luna or not buying Luna because of the economy. I just almost have heard nobody talking like this. So I don't know, at least in the community that I see. And then also a lot of the community, of course, is not even in the United States, right? It's all over the world. So, you know, what equities markets do on a relatively small cap like asset in the grand scheme of things, you know, I don't know that it's going to not, it might just counter trade the market, quite frankly. I have no idea, but I suspect that it probably will do okay. So there's a lot of things going for Luna that are not the case for everything else. But is it possible that, you know, crypto could drag? Maybe. Or maybe crypto becomes a safe haven, right? It's quite possible that you have the opposite effect of what everyone thinks. And instead of people thinking that Bitcoin is like the risk on, you know, everyone screws their head on properly and realizes it's actually the less risky thing to be in. Because really, Bitcoin's beauty is you can buy exponentially on the way down. It can't go to zero. And it basically beats all other assets in, of all time in that regard, except for maybe gold, except that's not even true because gold, there's like a lot of paper gold. So it's essentially, it's not verifiably scarce. So even that's largely half scam. So really, if you look at it that way, like it's a pretty good, the crypto market, I think, is relatively safe. It's been shown to rebound quite nicely. So as long as you are not like stuck, you know, in the sense that like if you as an investor don't mind holding, if the market's down, then do what I do and just get more when the market goes down. And that's just looked as an opportunity. And that's all you have to really do. But it really depends on your personal position and how big it is and how much time you have to wait. So Caleb, yeah?
Yeah, so there was a post recently on Twitter about a hypothetical scenario where Mike Novogratz deposited about $1 billion in Anchor, guaranteeing 20% for everyone. Everyone investing with Galaxy Digital. What do you think will happen if that? What do you think will be the drawbacks in that scenario? How do you think that scenario will play out if it happens?
So yeah, if someone puts a lot of money in Anchor or anywhere else and sort of depletes the pool faster, first of all, there's quite a bit of money in the pool right now. It takes a while to deplete that, but even if you did deplete it, then ultimately the like, you know, the yields will go back to something more normal, like what everyone else gets, and it'll still be better than most things on the market. So I think it'll be fine. Now they may cause some deleveraging types of activity on like MIM Degen Box and things like that if the yield goes down. So it's not going to be like without consequences at all. But as far as like the survival of the ecosystem, I'm not too worried about it. Like the biggest gift anyone can give me is make Luna's price go down and I'll take care of the rest. So, you know, that's like, it's an unwanted. So if people want to cause havoc, I'm perfectly fine with it. I'll just go buy more.
So I'm guessing that there must be a sweet spot at which sweet deposit spots in which we can deposit on Anchor, not too large, not too small, I would say.
I don't think you and me deposit on Anchor in terms of like, okay, so like if you deposit an Anchor, I don't think you have to worry about your funds there, right? It's not a question of like, the only thing you're worried about is my yield going to be sufficient? Is that going to go down? But it's not like you're going to lose funds or anything like that, right? So it's just the yield that would get affected.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so you're not at risk or anything. I mean, no. Like now if you borrowed off your Luna and then parked it there and that now the yield is lower, you might decide to not do that because maybe the cost to borrow and the yield you're getting there may not make sense. So any kind of looping that you're doing may not make sense, but it's still it's not going to be like a threat to the ecosystem if the yield on Anchor falls necessarily.
Okay, got it.
Cool. Yeah. Prophet, did you have a,
sorry, I know you're about to. I know you're about to finish off. I think this is a good question to finish off. Anybody that, because I did bring some people here that want to use a protocol like Anchor. Any advice for a newbie getting on the protocol? Any type of video would you direct them to before getting on there?
As far as Anchor, I think Terabytes has some on YouTube. I think Donku has done some. And really the two pieces of the puzzle are obviously just UST to earn. And the second thing would be to borrow off Luna, would be the two basic functions. You can also borrow off of bonded Ethereum if you prefer, but, like those are the first two things that I think most people will care about. So if they prefer Luna exposure and they want to borrow off it, that's one thing. And then if they just want UST, exposure, I think a reasonable tactic for a newbie might be like, they don't even know what they're doing. They park some UST on Anchor they get some yield, they buy their Luna with that yield, and then they can kind of start playing in there and then deciding what they want to do. Especially if you're in like dubious market conditions, you're bringing in friends, and that is the right time to be bringing on friends, though, because when prices are low is when you want them to be involved, right? You don't want to get them wrecked when it's at the top. So this is the exact right time to be getting in if you're new, honestly. Like, this is where the real opportunities begin. So if you've got people that aren't in crypto right now, this is the time, is when everything is like on the way down is the perfect time. And teaching people how to like buy on the way down is probably the most important skill they'll ever learn. Well, cool. There are some more questions, but I'm going to break because I've got some things to do right now. Hopefully everyone learned something slightly different this time. And we'll do some more of these another time. All right. Catch everyone later.
Thanks
later, Trevor. Thanks for everything, Trevor.
Yeah, let me know next time. I'll try to jump in.
Yeah, sure. Maybe you can talk about the tickets platform again.
Oh, hell yeah. I can get into whatever the hell.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, all right. See you, man.
Sounds good. Bye.
Yeah, peace.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was part two of a two-part CeFi Space Luna Terra Info, recorded on Friday, February 11th, 2022. This episode of The Ether was brought to you by Talus. Talus Protocol is the NFT platform for independent artists on Terra. Talus helps to provide artists with the tools and resources needed to transition from traditional art into the NFT world. With their V1 launch coming soon, Talus will be the place to see real-world art reflected on Terra. Be sure to join their Telegram and follow Talus on Twitter for updates on their roadmap, validator, and other Talus news. Find your next favorite artist on talus.art. This episode of The Ether was also brought to you by Orbital Command, a community validator on Terra dedicated to educating, expanding, and promoting the Lunatic community. Follow Orbital Command on Twitter using the link in the show notes to receive regular threads on Terra protocols and yield strategies, news, resources, and Twitter space discussions. You can also support their community efforts by considering them next time you're delegating or redelegating your Luna. Find out more at orbitalcommand.io. TerraSpaces appreciates the support from all our sponsors. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. Sneaking through back alleys on a little cosplay. Broadway all day, looking like the wrong way. Resuscitating major players in the waiting room. Sifting through the paperwork while I be debating fools. Breaking rules, breaking bad, like we always wait for doom. Slayed a few in my early years off underneath the shrooms. Sitting in the dark, waiting for the daily news to let us know what we should believe as the latest truth. Stay aloof, writing rhymes in the studio. Trying to keep it well lit like filming a movie role. Sorting through support from your endorsements. Of course, we're tripping balls, handed reports it. The latest proof ain't a way to move, change the view. Just a bunch of pack of heads living in a chicken coop. Picking at the dinner, finger licking like the plate is good. So kick it for a minute, then show me what that thinker do. 2 plus 2. Show me what that thinker do. 2 plus 2. Show me what that thinker do. 2 plus 2. Show me what that thinker do. 2 plus 2. Big thinking energy always gets the best of me. When I kick it in the lab, messing with new recipes. Gotta mix and match, flip the latch, letting rhythm scratch. Dope shit, spitting facts with my vision smashed. Big drip aristocrat, dishing out a list of trash. Missing wisdom, this fish is too big to catch. Better let the missus know where you hit the stash. Watch your next step, bro, before you hit the traps. Walking on eggshells, tripping over landmines. And I'm about done dealing with these damn lies. Man, I'm looking at this planet like a franchise. Chastised into digging holes in the back nine. The latest proof ain't a way to move, change the view. Just a bunch of peckerheads living in a chicken coop. Picking at the dinner, finger licking like the plate is good. So kick it for a minute, then show me what that thinker do. 2 plus 2. Show me what that thinker do. 2 plus 2. Show me what that thinker do. 2 plus 2. Show me what that thinker do. 2 plus 2.
Terra Spaces.